Hello and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, let's just get straight to this week's album, which is from 2017, Standing Stones by Marian Call. Marian Call is an American singer-songwriter based in Juneau, Alaska. She's known for her lyrics, which are often based on unusual subject matter. She's written about Firefly, Battlestar Galactica, Pride and Prejudice, St. George and the Dragon, beer, coffee, the ISS, a recent song about the unusual relationship between Pluto and its largest moon, Charon. And her use of atypical instruments, kazoo, rain stick. She even frequently uses a typewriter as percussion. And as well as her rise to popularity through the use of the internet and social networking. Singing Stones is based on a Christian prayer book called The Book of the Hours, which has a prayer for each day. Marian has said that she's attempting with this album to create a secular version of it.
Okay.
And it's her 10th album, capping her first decade of recording, 2007 through 2017. It was produced and edited by Marian and Brian Ray and features Marian on keyboards, percussion, and vocals, Brian Ray on guitar, keyboards, banjo, and saxophone and percussion, Scott Barkin on guitars, Kyle Robarge on bass, Stephen Bidwell on drums and percussion, Ellen Kilcup on cello, Papa Diggity on harmonica. I suspect that's Paul Pugh, her father. He frequently plays piano on her albums.
You think that's a stage name, huh?
Possibly. Her Majesty Laura Zaheski on mandolin, Joseph Willard on baritone sax, Derek Phelps on trumpet, Mobley, Molly Lewis, and Seth Boyer on background vocals, Brian O'Flynn on DMX drum machine, Calder Lemons on percussion, Zippy on percussion. Zippy was her late cat, whose ashes she keeps in a tin and uses for percussion on several of her albums and live.
Okay.
And the donor circle on claps and vocals. Full disclosure, I am part of Marian's donor circle, so my voice and hand claps are on the title track of this album.
Oh, okay.
And at the end of the credit list on Bandcamp, she says, listen carefully and in order. So the order is important on this one. Also, should note, because it's Thursday as you're watching this, if you're watching it when it went up, this episode's going out early. It's flipping with Zombie Takeout because Marian has an online concert this upcoming weekend on Saturday the 21st, and I want to promote it. It's not a normal online concert, which is what I thought it was up until a couple of days ago. And her normal online concerts are amazing. I've been to several. But this one's a fundraiser for herself. She's independent. She's got to make money however she can. And she's doing karaoke. She's offered her donor circle the opportunity to suggest songs. And then she's having people tip to, you know, push songs further up on the list. And the kicker is she didn't grow up listening to pop music.
That explains a lot.
Yes. And she said that there's maybe two songs on the list that she's even heard, and she's not going to research or rehearse them ahead of time. So she's going to go in blind, never hearing these songs, with just the lyrics and the backing track and improv the melody.
I was going to say, how the fuck is that going to work? How do you
I don't know.
How do you get a melody?
I don't know, but I can't wait to see it. Saturday, April 21st, 2018, as we're recording this, in case you're watching it in the future, at 5 p.m. Eastern, I think, and I'll double check before this episode goes up, 1 p.m. Alaska time. So, yeah, it should be very, very interesting. And the show is free, but she'll, of course, accept tip storing in before it. Now, finally, on to the tracks themselves. As I try to remember to say every week, I don't edit the music into the show for copyright reasons. But down in the description, you'll find a link to Standing Stones on Bandcamp. Yes, I'm using Bandcamp again, in case you didn't watch last week. Whenever an album's on Bandcamp, that's what I'm going to use, because they allow you to stream it for free and pay whatever you want at or above a base price. And they gave a larger cut to the artist than any other streaming, you know, or iTunes or anything like that out there, Amazon, what have you. So I highly recommend using them. I've bought a lot there. All right, finally, on to track one, Bones. And Marian did an appearance on a radio show the day the album was released, February 24th of 2017, and said that this song is basically a tribute to St. Vincent.
It's not Dr. McCoy.
Mm-hmm. It's a tribute to St. Vincent because she was listening to a lot of St. Vincent working on the album. And it shows. I love the stark opening. It's just one note on a piano and some drums.
I do love how her voice changes from, you know, kind of comes out as shy in the beginning, mm-hmm. and then it just, you know, up it strengthens up, you know, to to what it, you know, climaxes to.
And it's very electronic at first, which is unusual for her work and this album particularly. And it kind of gets more less electronic as it goes on. And the vocals kind of swirl. You can't really catch all the lyrics just from listening to it, because there's like three different lines going on at once.
Right.
And it sets up a lot of the themes of the album. There's a line about how... I'm trying to remember it offhand. I should have put this one in my notes. So I overestimated my ability to remember it. Here we go. The line "brace to stitch a story on" and referring to bones comes back at the end. And there's a reference to the 12 ages of man, which comes back in a later song.
That, you know, how it ends, we're only bones with stories on in the end.
And there are themes that continue through the album. This isn't exactly a concept album, but it's held together by some recurring themes.
Yeah, there's, you know, bones and stones, you know, it's sort of, I guess, what's held together, you know, what's your foundation.
And what we leave behind.
Yeah.
And speaking of body parts, I love the aggressive bridge. You know, she's talking about, you know, standing soldiers for my skin, fingers at my fingertips, and the guitar is just pounding. It's a great contrast from this, you know, stark electronic opening. And it ends with this drum solo that reminds, effectively, that reminds me a lot of the opening to the reboot of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, really?
There was a section in the opening theme that was just drums.
I don't even remember the theme to the new Battlestar.
But I went back and listened to it today to make sure I was thinking right. And there's a section with drums, but there's also a lot of other instruments and some vocals on it.
I mean, it faked me out because I thought we were just at this point where we were going full on prog, and it was, you know, bridging into like yet another section, and instead it was just the end. It was like, oh, all right.
And then there's just this one last guitar chord that reminds me a bit of Dancing Days. I think it's a C sharp minor on a Telecaster, which is what Jimmy Page usually played in the studio, and I know that's what Scott Barkin played on the album.
Led Zeppelin is something that I hear more of even than St. Vincent in this, honestly.
This song particularly, that's interesting.
On this album, Led Zeppelin was like the one that, I guess it's a game I play where I try to think of like, okay, what are the influences? Mm-hmm. If I were to describe someone meets someone, how would I go to describe this? And honestly, this is, you know, confounded me the most. I mean, I know there's Led Zeppelin meets someone, but I'm not sure. I'm like, they might be giants. No, maybe not necessarily. They might be giants.
When she was working on the album, I backed this one on Kickstarter, and, you know, like I said, my voice is on it. So I've been following I followed the process for like 2 years. She made a big deal about the drums on the album because a lot of her stuff is very acoustic. And kind of folky. And this is, you know, certainly her most rock album. And so the Zeppelin influence makes sense. She also describes herself on the Bandcamp page as Joni Mitchell meets Regina Spektor, having been raised on, or the love child of Joni Mitchell.
Joni Mitchell was definitely another one that I was thinking. Having been
raised on TMBG. She loves TMBG. She did a cover album.
Really? Okay.
She covered them.
Like, so I heard kind of a fleeting "they might be giants" in there on the album, but it was like, but not enough to say, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Joni Mitchell definitely was another one that I was like, yeah, or Carly Simon, but I think Joni Mitchell more so.
Her acoustic stuff is very reminiscent of Joni Mitchell. All right, on to track two, "No Paper," and "Bones" is kind of the story is about being born, and you know, gestation and birth. It kind of follows a life in that sense, in a lot of ways the album does. And this is very much childhood and sort of the teen years. You know, it's that infinite potential.
Are you saying she did a Days of Future Past year, sort of?
Well, that's about the day. This is more direct. And life was the subtext.
Right.
This is more direct. And it's really just the first few songs and maybe the last one. She doesn't stick really heavily to the theme. But this one is basically jazz rock fusion. It's a jazz vocal with a rock band.
Right. Like, it begins very like funky rock. And and I would say, and I have my notes here, I found myself hooked, you know, for this artist. at that first jazz break, because it sounds like it's just going to be your typical kind of funky rock song. And then there's just like this crazy jazz break in the like early. Yes.
Yeah, jazz vocals,
And I was just like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Her acoustic stuff, like I said, very jazz influenced as well. And I love the bass on this. Shout out to Kyle Robarge. His playing is very simple, but it's perfectly in the groove. And also, again, another shout out to Scott Barkin, an amazing guitarist. Marion said during that radio appearance that she asked him to play like an 11-year-old who just got his first guitar. And he definitely evokes that. It's very noisy and very chaotic. I've been that kid, and you can't do that with no experience. You can't play what Scott Barkin played on this track. You need to know what you're doing to be able to do what you did. It's kind of like how you have to be a really good actor to deliberately act badly, or singer to deliberately sing badly. Same kind of principle. And I love the baritone sax and the kind of almost distorted harmonica. They play perfectly with the atonal guitar. And also on the line, there's no shouting loud enough to tell you what I gotta say. I love that she deliberately goes a little bit off key.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
On that line. It's just a little bit. I think you have to have a bit of an ear to notice.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a song called Love and Harmony, the first Marianne Call song I'd heard when she appeared on a podcast called NSFW. On the studio version, the song is about karaoke. And on the word karaoke in the chorus, on the studio version, she just goes a hair off key. On the live version I saw, she went completely dead cat off key. and that's when I immediately became a fan. So I love that she went a little off key on that line in the song. On to track 3, Oregon Trail. This one starts with just a harmonized vocal that is so tight it sounds electronic.
Right.
It's actually 3 or 4 people, and it's so perfectly precise that you think it's a harmonizer. But the harmonies fall apart as the song goes on, which I love.
So is it voiceover, or is it?
No, it's Marion, Seth Boyer, Molly Lewis, and possibly Mobley. I've heard Seth Boyer and Molly Lewis before. I haven't heard Mobley, so I don't recognize their voice.
Because, it is a great beginning, just that a cappella. You know, it really does grab you right in.
And this is on the surface about the Oregon Trail and, you know, traveling westward and running into all sorts of problems. But it's also kind of about that late teens, early 20s period when you leave home and suddenly get punched in the face by reality.
Or you move out to Chicago.
Yeah. And the line that really gets to me is the verse chorus structure is a little loose on this album and in general with Marianne's work, but I think I'm going to say it's the third verse. We went somewhere out west where nowhere seemed to feel like home, and digging in the yard, we found somebody else's bones. The moment that the shovel hit, we bowed before the things we should have known. That line of the moment that the shovel hit, we bowed before the things we should have known just kills me every time.
Just the whole image, you know, it on so many levels about you. We thought this was just, we were the first people here. Mm-hmm. You know, we thought we were Neil Armstrong. Well, yeah, she doesn't use those words. And then, wait, somebody else had already done this and died and failed and lived and whatnot right here. So yeah, that.
And she talks about, it was just our generation's selfish. I can't remember something like selfish, vague idea, you know, to go out, to think we were the first ones traveling out.
Right.
And I love how in the middle of the song, it's all this, it's very mellow and acoustic, and then drums and bass come in when the things start to go bad. That's when the percussion comes in, and it gets very minor key and very mellow and very dark, I should say. And there's another reference to the 12 Ages of Man at the end. And that's when the harmonies really start falling apart. We were not the first ones here is the line. And they start drifting and kind of slipping a little bit of out of key as things are going really bad for the exposition or expedition in the song. Until they just completely fall apart, until there's just the last line, but Marion alone, we will make no more miles today. All right, on to track 4, Standing Stones. This is really the drums. This is the drums that Marianne was going on about.
Right.
Because this is a straight up rock song, the first on the album. And I love that there's banjo on a rock song.
This is definitely a rock song. No bones about that.
But Brian Ray's banjo playing is front and center in a few spots, which is a really interesting contrast. Jonathan Colton does that occasionally.
Yeah.
And Scott Barkin really shines on this one too. There's actually a guitar solo, which is very rare on Marianne's music.
Really? Okay.
Albeit a short one. And the lyrics are really about sort of the history of humanity. You know, we carved the limestone to show the stars ascent, and built this, we built different things, and just kind of traces our development and says, all we leave are standing stones.
Hope for development. Yeah. I mean, I love her voice in this. It's like a storm, and it just feels like it surrounds you in this.
Yeah. And it's this great cutting guitar, and first time the drums are really up front, as in a rock context, because they were very present on Bones. And of course, I got to shout out the background vocals.
except that one asshole clapping. I don't know where they found him.
On the track 5, Hope. This is actually the second version of the song that she's released. There was an acoustic version that appeared on her 2013 album Sketchbook. This one is surprisingly more sparse than that version, even though it's electric and has bass and drums.
Yep. Right. It's kind of a letdown after everything that's come before it.
It's a contrast.
But I think it's still well executed. I just think in the order, and I think that's the only criticisms I probably have come up with on this album is that the order just should be different sound wise, but I'm thinking if there's a concept at play here,
this makes sense.
This
makes sense thematically at this point, talking about the Oregon Trail, about how you're getting punched in the face by reality. And then all we leave behind is, standing stones. And then we come into, the chorus, which I love. My hope, it is not frail. Yeah. What is it? I wish I'd written these things down. My hope, it is not frail. It is not light. It is the anchor, My hope, it's not the sail. It is the anchor. I'm blanking on some of the lyrics. I apologize. But as someone who has issues with anxiety and depression, the idea of hope being an anchor, it really resonates with me.
It's just so lyrically dense. I wish I'd had more time with it, because it was impossible for me to get it on in a day or two.
I should point out that, as I mentioned, I Kickstarted this. I backed this one on Kickstarter, so I got it immediately.
And I'm trying to remember what you shared with me, a song or two of this, I think.
As soon as it hit Spotify, I heavily recommended it. So I know you listened to about half of it. So I got it immediately, and I think it was the only thing I listened to for about a month, literally at all. And I listened to a lot of music. I had to stop listening to it so I didn't get sick of it.
That's how I listen to a lot of albums, where I'll just, there'll be a handful maybe, or sometimes if it's just something I'm really into, I'll only do it once a day, though. I won't do it more. It's very rare that I found an album that I'm I just got to fucking listen to that again. I mean, there's you count on one hand,
I don't usually do it all the way through. I'll do that a couple of times, and then I'll just pick out particular songs, whatever's bouncing around in my head. I'll go to that.
Yeah.
Back to Hope. Yes. I love the imagery in the last verse. And this I do have in my notes. This is the point where I finally thought to copy down lyrics. I played home to you on the 4th of July with lightning a riot above and fireworks below. Something's possessed the Midwestern summer sky. Thunder and sparklers, aurora and stars, and a red subarctic sunrise. I can picture that, what it would be like to be in that flight, with all this chaos around it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it ends with the line, or almost ends with the line, I wonder if I've been struck by lightning yet, which is a very curious line, because the song is about overcoming loss and maintaining hope. And I wonder if that was a sign of being numb. You don't know if you've been struck by lightning. or if it's about inspiration. You know, that's often shown as a lightning strike.
The saying of don't go home with hope.
And the jazz trumpet, which I didn't notice till the end of the song. I loved that. Because it is a very, it's not exactly a jazz, it's a ballad, but it really leans into jazz when you bring in the trumpet.
Right. So I'm not sure if this would have had more attention if it were earlier in the album, you know, but I'm sure with multiple listenings, it'll, you know.
Mm-hmm. Musically, I can see what you mean. It would have made a bit more sense maybe after Bones, perhaps.
Maybe, because like before Oregon Trail, you're just like, holy shit, that's, you know, like, I mean, it's a ballad, but it's like really interesting, you know? And then to go from that to doing
a rock song.
And then just doing a straight up ballad, it's kind of like, oh, all right. You want to build, but you know, thematically.
Although if you've been paying attention to the order of albums we've been reviewing, I tend to like, I'm the one who set it up. I tend to like abrupt shifts in that sense.
Abrupt shifts are cool and everything, but sometimes, and especially if you're evoking the Led Zeppelin, it's about the build. You're getting to that when that levee breaks, you know?
And speaking of abrupt shifts, track 6. Pop rock was an interesting change of pace on this album.
Yes.
And not something I expected, having been a Marianne fan for a few years when this album came out. This was a real change of pace. And I'd heard some demos. But the donor circle, I talked about the donor circle earlier. What it is you pay a certain amount and you get access to unreleased songs and demos and as she's working on things and all that. All this behind the scenes stuff. So I'd heard demo versions of this song throughout the process. And I never quite got my head around it until I heard the finished version, because it is such a departure for her. It is a straight up pop rock song.
Yeah.
And it's a comment on social media, which fits the genre perfectly.
And I just, this would have been a choice, my choice for a single. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's, yeah, you know, I don't think she did this one.
She's released a video for Oregon Trail. I think the official single was the title track. She hasn't really done a video for that one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you're marketing music and you've got a title track to an album,
yeah, of course,
you should always release it. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Genesis.
But yeah, she's really talking about, and I don't want to pin this on anybody in particular, any group in particular, but the people on social media who really live for the likes and the views and all of that. And sort of the approval on social media.
Those dudes who put podcasts together.
What's wrong with them? We're new media, not social media. That's different. we're talking about the people who are. I'm referring specifically to the people who are like professional Instagrammers.
True. Well, I mean, you know what? If they're professional, though, living, fuck it. You know,
fair point.
One that went and shot YouTube, it's like they were fucking with their money, guys.
Well,
you know, I've seen people get even angrier than that when they've gotten their money fucked with.
Let's sidestep that a little bit. But you know, the people who the taste makers, as they're called, they make a living showing interesting things on YouTube, and even just aside from the professionals, just the people who live for the validation from strangers that they get on social media.
That's it. Because, I mean, I worked a job for a number of years where I was in internet hell.
Uh-huh.
And it was my job to look at the business's reviews.
Oh.
And so I've seen them all. Uh-huh. I've seen them all. I know when I'm reading a restaurant review and they begin with, it was Valentine's Day and it was a negative review. I'm like, well, that person's an asshole who has no idea what they're talking about.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. It's just this narcissistic.
And the song is about a person getting ready for a date.
Yeah.
And talking about how they're going to put it on social media and all of these likes and get all this attention.
It's more important than the date.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a line. No one knows if we felt our feelings yet. And give me proof that I exist. You know, is fun. I bet.
I do love songs about living in our time, in this particular time, because there will be people who won't understand years from now just how jarring this was to have gone from just being people to conducting her own PR and social media.
Yeah, basically.
You know, remember the days we were just people? I know, I sound 1,000 years old, but it's true.
Uh-huh. And I can't bash it too much. I mean, one of my closest friends lives in France, so without the internet, I wouldn't know her.
Oh, right, totally.
Another very close friend lives in Maryland, you know?
Well, wait a minute, though. I've been on this internet longer than most.
We're recording this from halfway across the country.
Of course. I was on this internet long before most of these motherfuckers have been. I've been on it since the mid-80s when we were doing just, you know, green text or whatever, you know, and BB, you know, bulletin board services.
But there's something about social media particularly, because we had Instant Messenger before then.
Right.
And chat rooms and such. But social media particularly has made it, and I think it's maybe the use of photos, the addition of photos, because we didn't really have that in chat rooms and IM, that makes it about the appearance.
Yeah.
It's the MTV of social interaction online.
It's been one of the toughest developments of our recording here, of going from just... you know, having to wear pants and stuff. Although I am
pretty no. The camera only shows us from the chest up. We could easily do no pants. To comment a bit on the music, of course. Loved the 80s style synth on the bridge, the Is It Midnight Yet part, and the little touches of mandolin on a pop rock song. Again, unusual instruments in the genre. It's a straight up pop rock song, but there are these little bits of mandolin throughout it. Just that added nice contrast. And another abrupt shift. Track 7, I love this title, Mediocre Algorithmic First Dates.
It's a good companion piece to the last track, though. Sure,
lyrically, it is a beautiful companion piece.
From one to the other.
Yeah. And this is classic Marian, acoustic folk. I love how the wordy title contrasts with the really mellow nature of the song. Because she gets that line out in the first line. In the first phrase, she gets that title out.
They gotta.
Yeah. And it just kind of is an interesting contrast. And there are some great relationship metaphors. He brought a story for me. He had it custom made. Asked if I could try on the role he had his eye on. And then later she talks about armor. And it's all about getting into a relationship because you have nothing better going on at the time. And then over the years, realizing you don't fit into it. You know, they're a perfectly fine person, but it's just not the right fit for you.
Yeah.
And getting years down the line and realizing what you've dug yourself into.
So yeah, I'd choose the line. It was heavy gilded armor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love when the rhythm section comes in like about 3/4 of the way, actually more like almost toward the very end. The rhythm section just comes in for the last part of a verse very suddenly. Now, my first criticism, I only have a few criticisms of the album, and they're all very nitpicky, I'll admit. There's the line, when it isn't your story, when it isn't your song, she repeats a few times. A little too much for my taste. I think maybe there was one too many.
I think a lot of her work reminds you of Ted Leo.
Who will be hopefully be reviewing next week.
And I mean, I think it's this one. That I noticed the comparisons to one of the songs that he put out on his most recent, like just after this, or maybe around the same time, actually. Although this was early 17, I think he came out late 17, where he just repeats the line at the end. And it is a cool effect, I think, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, especially if you're just laying it on there, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a song, Nazarene, that he has that, it's kind of his first foray into something proggish.
I'll have to check it out. All right, on to track 8, Independence, another stark change. This starts off with this really chunky staccato acoustic guitar and a very angry vocal, which is, again, unusual for Marian. And it's also the only really political song on the album. We talked about Phlobots being very obvious. This is a little less obviously political, but in the second verse, she says, the frontier lives on in the dreams of certain men, all thinking themselves heroes, all wild-eyed to defend their right to never make a village square, their right to never lay a brick for someone else's sake. I think that's pretty obviously political.
Yeah, but I mean, it's... everything is political now, you know. even our decision to not be political is political in a way.
Fair point.
Although this might be the weakest of the album, I try to find like a weakest link of the album, but of course
that's
the album is so strong. It's not really that relevant which one would be the weakest.
It's one of my favorites, actually. I just love how the intensity of it. I do have, again, another minor nitpicky criticism. She gets to what is effectively the bridge of the song, the "And the Road" part. It goes from this really chunky staccato guitar to this finger-picked, really mellow section, really pretty section with mandolin. And it just kind of feels like the bottom drops out of the song a little bit. She doesn't really transition into it. It's a bit jarring. I adjust to it pretty quickly, but it's initially a little jarring to have this solid beat fall away. And there's really no reason for it in the lyrics. But I love the last verse. "Shove into the shatter, shoulder to the wheel, because independence is a myth, but loneliness is real." And the last line, "And I cursed the blind spot made you think you did. I have never heard such rage in a whisper."
Huh. I didn't pick up what she was saying at the end.
It's at the end of each verse. You're talking about independence and how you think you can build a barn alone. That's the analogy in the first verse.
Right.
And she says, "And I curse," I only have the last part of it here, but "I curse the burden made you think you could. And I curse the blind spot made you think you did." And it repeats throughout the song. And in the last time she hits that, "I curse the blind spot made you think you did," she's whispering it, but in it with a tremendous amount of rage.
Right.
Love that.
You could get the feeling, but I couldn't catch what it was exactly.
On to track 9, "Vespers." This is my current favorite, but that to me, that doesn't really mean much. I think most of the album has been my favorite at different times. This is one I am very tempted to quote the entire set of lyrics to.
I agree. This is, without a doubt, the strongest part of the album, hands down.
And this one seems to be about, in getting back to the original theme of bones and no paper, kind of like hitting your 30s and realizing, you know, what you were doing as an adolescent wasn't really working. And, you know, life hitting you in the face again in a very different way, in a kind of a transformative way. Love the line, "And in the last light, my scars all bear witness to what I've lived through, and I dreamed up another tattoo." In other words, another scar. I thought of another way to give myself another scar. Or, "My binaries break in the dark after dusk, so I'm done running from what was hard and what hurt."
That's why I've not been a tattoo person. I've got enough scars as this.
I have four of them, and I want more. So I'm on the other end of the spectrum. But in terms of scars, I have a fair amount of those.
I'm sure you do.
But I just love the idea. In this case, obviously, psychological scars, and you know, the idea of dreaming up another one. You know, wanting to do something that you know is going to scar you.
Yeah.
And the beat, the chorus. "So our suffering wrote us a song, so our bravery broke all our bones." That one, having, you know, grown up in the 90s, having been, you know, an adolescent in the 90s, you know, "so our suffering wrote us a song" really hits.
The after the ordeal and just well, at least I got a song out of it.
I love the kind of choral harmonies on "No Surprise."
Yes.
It's almost like a church choir.
"Empty hands help you find your way home."
That line was actually based on a video game called "Don't Starve."
Oh, yeah?
In the game, if you have empty hands, it means your inventory is clear.
Right.
So you can easily get through the game and you have plenty of space to carry things. So it really wasn't relevant to the topic, but it works. And it's very interpretive. I love that.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like freeing yourself, you know, of all your baggage.
Exactly. Second verse, I think, is what got me to realize it's about hitting your 30s and realizing the old ways don't work anymore. "In my garden, 12 columns stretched skyward, there were pedestals not long ago where my childish ideas and precarious idols did go. And she talks about tearing them down with ropes and resignation and replacing them with heroes and hope.
Or just, hey, I don't think I can drink that much anymore.
Oh, that's it. And another great line. So your victory came at a cost. So to find yourself got you so lost. That line hits me so hard. Holding tight made it slip through your grasp. The storm drove you to shelter at last. You know, I think you have to have some years on you.
Yeah.
Marion is 10 years younger than me. Oh, actually, one day shy of 10 years younger than me. Her birthday's on February 24th. Mine's February 25th. So, you know, I understand getting to that age is when you realize, you know, shit didn't quite work out the way I thought it would.
It's true. You're a kid. You've got this like logical progression, or most kids do, I think. They've got this, okay, I'm going to do this at this age, this at this age, and this at this age. And then you realize none of this works. Nothing. There is no map. There is no terrain even. You are just, you're kind of, you know, surfing an avalanche, to quote Spock's beard.
And so I got to get rid of the stuff that I thought was going to work and that I was relying on, replace it with stuff that might work.
Yeah.
Even though there's no guarantee for that. And at the end, there's just kind of this jam session where the band keeps going and the background vocals repeat. And her voice sounds odd, kind of fuller than she does on the rest of the album. I don't know if it's the key or not. I checked to see if she was maybe a little off. No, she's perfectly on key, of course, as always, unless it's deliberate. I don't know. Maybe it's just the register. Something sounds a little odd.
Yeah, I say she like gets Carole King or Carly Simon here at most. And only you've got this Led Zeppelin style epic, you know, with the harmonies all folded in and everything. So it's just, this is definitely just the best off the album.
On to track 10, The Devil. This is another one that really resonates with me. It's about facing your demons, being confronted with them in the middle of the night. And I love the rhythmic effect of the repeated lyrics. I was complaining about repeated lyrics earlier, but in this case, it works.
Well, that's a style of poetry that dates back. Yeah. I mean, Native American culture used it the most. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, it wasn't the rhyme; it was the repetition. And you know, it's stuff that Rage Against the Machine was using, you know, all of which are American dreams, you know, when he repeats a mantra.
The last verse of Killing in the Name of.
Exactly. So that's where I think they're both going with here.
And this is another one with swirling lyrics, and the vocals are doubled, and they're a little different on each side. This one you really need to listen to with headphones.
Yeah, I love everything with headphones. Yeah,
same here.
My computer doesn't even have speakers, which I kind of wish it did, honestly.
I love the atmosphere the horns give it. The horns are really up front on this one. And the bridge, the lines about fear, are my new litany against fear. Frank Herbert is out, Marion Cole is in. And this one I can quote from memory without even having to look at my notes. You cannot intimidate me. Fear is my old friend. We dated for a while and she still calls me now and then. I've gone all the way with fear and back. You don't know what I've seen. And without her on your side, you cannot turn me against me again. I have repeated that to myself so many times in the last year and change. Like I said, this song really hits me.
It is the mind killer.
Yeah. And I love how big the ending gets. She's just kind of scatting over these big horns and the band is just going full steam. And then it gets very quiet and fades out. It's this great abrupt change at the end.
I mean, the harmonies on this, of course, I think are just absolutely excellent.
And a lot of it is Marion on this one. It's. I mean, I'm sure Seth and Molly and Mobley are in there, but it's a lot of Marion kind of duetting with herself.
And this is one I would think. I think it should have been switched with Vespers.
Okay.
In order, you know, kind of like to build up to
build
it.
Build up to the hit of Vespers, yeah.
Yeah, the conventional prog wisdom is you know, you build up to your climax. You either have that climax at the end, or you have it the second to the last song with like something mellow at the end to kind of reflect back on what you heard.
And getting to the mellow at the end, track 11.
Exactly. The logical song for the end.
Grandpa had it right. A really nice mellow opening, a nice contrast after The Devil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a return to simplicity, both in terms of lyrics and musically. And it completes the original theme, though there's a line, "We're only bones with stories on." In the stones around the fire comes back. That line was in Bones. It kind of completes that idea that we live. What's the line? We wake, we witness, then we're gone. You know, it's about life, which is what the album is about. Right. And this is really only the only real criticism is with this song. To me, this is the weakest of the lot.
Oh, really?
And it's great up until the bridge. Never saw stars like that. Those lyrics, and a little bit about after that. I like you this way, and then it gets really rambly. The band just carries on in this groove, and she's kind of just calling back to previous lyrics.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really work for me. It kind of loses my attention up until the part about we wake, we witness, and we're gone. We're only bones with stories on pretty, but we don't last long. Love that line.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a bunch of calls and responses to we're only bones with stories on. And then it gets a little rambly again. It's just, I hate to use this word because I do love Prague. We both love Prague, and Prague is the definition of this, but it gets just a little self-indulgent to me.
No.
It just feels a little rambly, you know?
I mean, come on. You haven't listened to enough Emerson, Lake, and Palmer to think this gets self-indulgent.
Right. But, I mean, on this album, saying it's the weak spot is, like you said earlier, it doesn't really mean much when the album is so strong.
I think it's just the perfect outro for it, though, because it just, it's, you know, the reflective, it sums up the entire album pretty much to a T. It is the post-climax, you know?
It's the denouement.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the album. This is my current favorite album. Marion is my current favorite recording artist. So needless to say, I strenuously recommend this album.
Right, and I understand your optimism about the state of rock, you know, if you've been listening to this one, you know.
We've had an ongoing debate about whether or not rock and roll is dead. Don't want to get into it now, but this is you giving a little bit of ground.
Oh, I'd easily recommend this one, definitely.
That's it for Standing Stones by Marion Call. If you enjoyed this video, first off, again, just a reminder about her concert, 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturday the 21st. It should be an event. Should be very interesting. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like. Subscribe if you haven't. Down in the description, you'll find a link to Standing Stones on Bandcamp. And, of course, the concert. It's over at concertwindow.com/Marion Call. Again, there'll be a link. Until next time, and we'll be reviewing Ted Leo's The Tyranny of Distance. Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.